All right, so we're going to begin the third paragraph, bottom of your Gimel of the Days. Going back to the topic of Erchin, although again, a good part of this parak, even though nominally we're in the Sefer Erchin, a good part of this parak is going to deal with other things, not with Erchin. It's another one of these ones where we're going to have examples where once we start with something in Erchin, then we're going to have related, similarly phrased things as far as other Gimel. Mishnah says, Yesh for Erchin l'hokar l'hachmeh. When it comes to Erchin, you have cases of Kula and cases of Chumra, as we'll see the example, or with Sdei Achuzah l'hokar l'hachmeh, also with a Sdei Achuzah, which is a field that you inherited from your ancestors who originally got that field in the original division of Eretz Yisrael in Yeshua's time. There was also a Kula and a Chumra. And we're going to give examples. We're going to show what we mean in each one of them. Or with Shoda Mu'ad Shehema Sa'evet l'hokar l'hachmeh, also. Now, each of these things, we have to realize each of these things is something where the Torah gives a fixed tariff for something. In the case of Erechin, we've been learning the Torah gives a fixed amount. If you're donating the Erech, for example, a man between 20 and 60, it's always going to be 50 slotim. If it's a woman of that age, it's always going to be 30, et cetera, et cetera. Same thing with each of these other things. There's a fixed amount that the Torah says. And in that, there can be a kula or a chumra. Or a shor ha'mu'ad shehema sa'eved l'hokar l'hachmer. Also, when a shor ha'mu'ad kills an eved, there is a kula and a chumra. And the onus of a mufato of Moti Shemra, Lahokal Lahachmer. And when it comes to an onus, somebody who rapes a girl, an unmarried girl, where the Torah tells him to give a knaft and he's required to marry her if she and her father want, etc., or mufato, where he seduces her, or Moti Shemra, or where he slanders his wife and based in, claiming after they got married, that the Torah tells about it in Parshas Kifese, that he claims that she was Mizana during the Erusin, which if true would make her Chayav Misa, and if not, then he gets Malchus and he pays a Knaf and he's never allowed to divorce her. So in all of those, Lahokal Lahachmer, in all of those, you have a Kula and a Chumra. Each of those, again, you have a fixed amount the Torah says to give, and with that fixed amount, therefore, that can sometimes result in a Kula, sometimes a Chumra. So what do we mean? Yesh ve'erchin l'hokar l'hachmer case. That what do we mean? The kula and the chumra when it comes to erchin. Echad sheherech es hanah shel Yisrael ve'hakorah shel Yisrael. Whether somebody pledges the erech of the most beautiful yid, whose actual market value might be worth a lot more, ve'hakorah shel Yisrael, or the ugliest yid, where his actual market value might be a lot less. Nevertheless, no, some commission seller is still paying 50 seller, assuming the guy is between 20 and 60 years old, because the Torah fixes an amount, and therefore that's that. On the other hand, had he said that I'm obligated to pay his domim, which is the actual market value, no sinus shavio, then he would be giving to the base mekdash, to hektish, the person's actual monetary value. So in that, that domim changes. So that's the point. In other words, the 50 slayim, for example, there can be a kula and a chumra. It can result in a kula if, for example, the guy is the guy's worth more. The guy's worth 100, let's say, and he's getting away with paying only 50. And on the other hand, if the guy's only worth 10 and he's paying 50, then he's that's the point. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. When we say yesh ba'erchan l'hokum chola l'hachmer, ketzaj ech chaherich chola, we said in the Mishnah that the example would be if a person pledged the erech of the most beautiful Jew or of the ugliest Jew. So why are we mentioning Dafka a Jew? Apparently, we're only talking about declaring the Erech of a Yid, not of a Goy. In that case, Lema Masnissin, the Leiter of Meir. Would that have to mean that our Mishnah does not follow Rav Meir's opinion? Which we learned in the first Perek, the Tanan, over Tuchavim, when it comes to a Goy, Rav Meir Omer Nerech of a Lemarech. Rav Meir says that a Goy can be the subject of an Erech. On the other hand, if he pledges an Erech, Rav Meir says that it doesn't mean anything. So therefore, in other words, according to the mayor, a yid can say, I pledge the erech of this goy, and we look at the goy's age and sex, and then we determine the erech appropriately. So apparently, if our Mishnah is mentioning the erech of a Jew specifically, even the most beautiful, the ugliest Jew, seems like it's not according to the mayor. The other way around. The mayor says that you could say the erech of this goy, and it's a valid erech. The goy can't, I think I said it backwards. If the goy himself says, I pledge an erech, nothing happens, according to the mayor. But if a yid says, I pledge the erech of that goy, yes. The answer is no. A people tell me the mayor. Not necessarily. You could even say, our Mishnah goes like a mayor. Who are din da'afilo over to chavim nami? And in fact, the actual din as such might apply to a goy also. Ela milsa agav uche from mashmalon. However, why does the Mishnah phrase it in terms of an erech for a yid? Because the Mishnah wants to inform us, by the way, an incidental din. Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, namely the din that Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav, the Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, also la'odim she'yomer kamenor knani zeh. a person is also to say, how beautiful is this Knani? Knani obviously is a change from the censor. It means in general a goy. A yid is not allowed to praise the appearance of a goy because you have a pasuk in the Torah that says, Loisachonim, which means, among other things, Loisitin Lahem Chayim. Don't ascribe any gracefulness or beauty to them. So therefore, in other words, our Mishnah is mentioning specifically, you're declaring the erech of a beautiful yid, not to say that it wouldn't be possible to also declare the erech of a goy, but you shouldn't be saying how beautiful is that goy anyway. Now, there is a lot to talk about as far as that. Some people argue that maybe the cloud in the Erie holds that in general, many of the things that it says in the Gemara about goyim don't apply to goyim in later times who do believe in some form of monotheistic religion, even if, you know, they believe in Christianity, let's say, fine, but, you know, it's shittuf, it's not total out and out of a disorder like they had in the old days, and they do at least officially believe in some kind of moral code based on the Torah, so therefore maybe that doesn't apply to them, they also talk about there can be a difference, for example, there can be a difference between praising one individual guy versus, for example, praising an entire nation for their good qualities. You actually have a Gemara in Brachas, for example, where Rebbe says, there's three things that I like about the Persians, that they're tanua and there's a tanua in eating and whatever. Anyway, so maybe that's the point. No, so Rebbe's saying it, obviously you're allowed to. So there can be a difference between praising the qualities of a nation at large versus praising the qualities of one specific guy. There can also be a difference between whether you're praising his physical beauty versus his intellectual abilities or whatever. Okay, anyway. Fine. So the question is, in that case, okay, then why doesn't the Mishnah phrase it that if you want the Mishnah to be according to the mayor, the Mishnah should have said whether a person vows the erech of the most beautiful Jew or the ugliest guy. Okay, the Mishnah wants to talk about one group of people. It doesn't want to switch in the middle to talking about two different groups of people, a Jew versus a guy. Okay, but the question is, Aloy, what do you mean, no? Barkatani, the next Mishnah, or not the next Mishnah, later on your Daled Amud Beis, another Mishnah in this series of Lahaka Ola Hachmer, gives an example. When it comes, we said in our Mishnah that when it comes to Oynes and Mefase, you're paying the same amount, there's Lahaka Ola Hachmer, and the Mishnah later on says that's true whether it's Hagdolah Shabbat Kahuna or Hakana Shabbat Yisrael, whether it's the most distinguished girl among the families of the Kohenim, or the least distinguished girl among the families of Israel. So you see it's mentioning two different groups. Okay, the answer is Hasam Chad Umah. Okay, but the fact of the matter is, an Umah is a nation. There, you're talking about all within one nation. Elam, Mekadesh Hu, the Kaddishi Kohenim Tveh. Okay, the Kohenim have greater Kedusha than the Israelans. So therefore, we want to single them out, and therefore we want to mention whether a person was Onus or Mephatha, the daughter of the greatest Kohen, or of the humblest Jew, he's paying the same 50 soin. But we're not going to go between two different nations. We're not going to mention in our Mishnah a Jew versus a Goy. There's no reason for the Mishnah to have to give that distinction. The Ibaris Bema, or another possible.
Say Kohen versus Jew?
No, in other words, the Mishnah later on can mention a Kohen versus Israel. Fine, Kohen and Israel all belong to the same nation. But there's no reason.
Really?
Yeah, what do you mean, really? We all belong to the Jewish people. As opposed to...
One nation.
No, they're not. That's the point. They all belong to the Jewish nation. There's a nation of the Jewish people, which includes Kohenim, Levim, and Israelim, as opposed to the Goyim, are nations of their own, and therefore our Mishnah doesn't have to mention Jews versus Goyim. The Ibaisem, or another possibility, you could say that the reason why our Mishnah focuses only on Jews, not specifically because of this idea that you're not allowed to say Kamanor Knani there, but rather, I did a Kaboyim Mishnah statement, because the next Mishnah, which again, the Mishnah, the Gemara often calls all the Mishnayos of a sequence, call them Reisha and Sefer, even though in our Mishnayos and our Gemara, they're printed as separate Mishnayos, but then in those times they learned them all as one unit. So since the next part of the Mishnah is going to continue with Sdei Achoza, with the case of a Sdei Achoza, a field that a person inherited in Eretz Yisrael from his ancestors, to be Yisraelu to Mashkachasla, now that you only find among Jews, but it's a problem by Mashkachasla. There's no such thing among Goyim of Sdei Achoza. This concept that we're going to talk about in the next Mishnah, that there's a fixed price for it, there's no such thing when it comes to fields that are owned by Goyim. The Lav B'nei Achoza, because they don't inherit Achoza. Now, Tosfos says it doesn't mean that Goyim don't inherit from their parents. There's a Gemara in Kedushin that tells us that a Goy does Yarishin his father, Minatera. But what it means is they don't have an Achoze in Eretz Yisrael. This whole concept of Sdei Achoza, that there's a fixed tariff, which we're going to talk about in the next Mishnah and the Gemara on it, that applies only to fields that are inherited in Eretz Yisrael, and the Goyim don't inherit land in Eretz Yisrael because they're not entitled to it. Eretz Yisrael belongs to us Jewish people. So therefore, and the whole concept of Shdei Achuzah, even if it happens for whatever reason, that a Goy owns a piece of land in Eretz Yisrael, it doesn't have the dinim of Shdei Achuzah, and therefore, so the next Mishnah is going to be talking specifically about something that applies to Jews, Mishamachi Katana Lobby Yisrael, therefore our Mishnah also mentions only Jews, even though maybe technically the dinim, even though technically the dinim could apply equally well if a person vowed the Erech of a Goy.
So nothing to do with
that there's a particular din in Erechin about Jews versus Goyim, nothing to do maybe with this whole business of that you're not allowed to say Kama Noa Knani, yeah, nothing of that. Okay. Well, there's not a matter of halacha. I mean, the halacha is, the halacha, after all, is, we said before, is like Rabbi Yehuda. Actually, we said the halacha is like the mayor, Nerach HaVolei Marech, so the halacha is, in fact, like the mayor, that a Goy can be Nerach, but he can't vow an Erech, so therefore...
He can be evaluated.
So therefore, when our Mishnah mentions specifically a Jew, not because a Goy can't be evaluated, the fact is, well, halacha, he could, but you're not supposed to say how beautiful is this Goy, and the Mishnah didn't want to switch midway between Jews and Goyim, or because anyway, the next Mishnah is talking about a din that applies specifically to Jews, and therefore it's preferred to keep all the Mishnayos consistent and have them all talk about Jews. And what do we mean that there's a kula and a chumra when it comes to Shdei Achuzah? So like this, echad amatish v'chumra. Now here you have what it means is the Torah tells us in Parashas Bechukotai that if a person is matish his Shdei Achuzah, there's a fixed value for it. The fixed value is for each base kur. A base kur is the area where you could plant one kur of barley. It's defined as 75,000 square amos. It comes out in terms of if you had it as a square, it would be about 270 some amma on a side. In modern terms, according to the Avraham Chaim, no, that would be somewhere around 400 feet on a side, and according to the Chazon Ish, it would be somewhere around 550 feet on a side. Anyway, let's say a square block. Well, if it happens to be a square, it doesn't matter what shape it is. The point is, just if it's a square, that would be the size of it. It's 75,000 square amos. Let's say, roughly speaking, we're talking about, say, the size of a city block, maybe. Anyway, very roughly. Anyway, for each area of that size, the Torah fixes a value like this. 50 shekel, if it's right after the Yovel, and one shekel plus one kundyan deducted for each year. We're going to learn about that in more detail later on in the Masechet. So, for example, let's say you were matish the field 40 years before Yovel, and then somebody else is buying it, from Hekdesh 10 years later, let's say when there's 30 years left to Yovel, so they have to take 30 stella and 30 kundyan. And that's fixed. So therefore, echad amatish b'cholat hamachos, whether a person is matish a field of that size, in cholat hamachos, which is low-quality land, what does cholat hamachos mean? It actually gives two explanations. One is that cholat means the surrounding, and machos means the city. So the area surrounding a city is not very good quality field because people are always trampling around there. So therefore, nothing grows very well over there. A second explanation of Rashi is that Machos is the name of a place, and Cholas HaMachos just means the area of Machos, which happened to be a place in Eretz Yisrael where the soil was poor quality. And there's other explanations also, including the Aruch explains that Cholas means sand, which means sand, and Machos, one interesting possibility is, in Arabic, the word Machos, or something similar to that, means the sea coast, so it means the sandy ground near the sea coast, which is, it's a nice place to go to go for a beach vacation, but it's not very good for planting. Anyway, so whether you're makdish a field over there, the echad a makdish pardesa sabasi, or whether a person is makdish a base core in the orchards, or vineyards, actually, Rashi says, of Sebasti, which are very high quality. Sebasti is the ancient city of Shomron. During the time of the first Beis Hamikdash, during most of the first Beis Hamikdash, it was the capital of the Aseret HaShvatim, the famous city of Shomron. Later on, it was destroyed when Aseret HaShvatim were exiled. Later on, hundreds of years later, Hordus rebuilt the place. He renamed it Sebasti, which is basically the Greek equivalent of Augustus. So he named it after Augustus, the Roman Caesar.
In Shomron?
It is the city, or right in the area of the ancient city of Shomron, but it was very high quality land. So whether a person is makdish in very, very low quality land, like in the sandy area of Machos or whatever, or in the vineyards of Sebasti, which is a very high quality land, either way, Noisin Zerach, Choymasod, and Bachamishim Shekel Kosef, either way, for each area of base where you could plant a base core of where we could plant a core of barley, you're paying 50 shekel if it's right after Yovel, and then it's prorated one shekel and one punyan per year. But on the other hand, over today, Mikna, had it been a field that you bought from somebody else, which is eventually going to return to him in Yovel, then there's no fixed amount, then no sinas shavio, then you give the actual market value of it. So there's the lahaka lahafner. If you're being makdish a field in cholat hamachos, and later on you or somebody else is buying it back from hekdish, you're paying much more than the actual market value of it, if it's a sdei achuzah. Whereas if it was a sdei mikna, you'd be paying much less. And if it's in Kardesis Tavasi, the other way around, if you're buying a sdei achuzah that like that back from hekdish, then you're paying a very cheap amount relative to the actual value of the field, which would be hundreds of slaves. So that's the lahaka lahafner.
Huge business, yeah.
Okay, but no. But
if you take out very cheap from hekdish and you sell it on the market,
well, that
continue doing these things.
Well, ultimately, a sdei achuzah is going to return to the original owner in Yovel. No, that's the point. In other words, so you could, for example, first of all, you'd have to have the original owner would have had to be makdish. So you'd have to have the original owner of an orchard or vineyard or whatever in Sabasi would have to be makdish. You would be then going and buying it from hekdish, which you're right, you're buying it for pennies on the dollar for the actual value. Sure, you could turn around and sell it to somebody else, but ultimately it's still returning to the original owner in Yovel.
Okay, so you're making money.
No, a sdei achuzah always returns unless it's in the hands of hekdish come Yovel. We're going to talk about... Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah, we're going to talk about those dinim of what returns in Yovel and what doesn't and what we do with hekdish and all that.
Maybe.
We're going to talk about that later on in the Masechta, in the Chos.
And then later. You buy from hekdish pennies on a dollar and you sell them on the general market.
That's fine. Okay. So you can be a multimillionaire. Halabai olders should be multimillionaires. Okay. Anyway, let's go. Okay. Fine. But on the other hand, with a sdei mikna, that doesn't work. With a sdei mikna, you're paying hekdish the actual market value. Okay. Rabbi Yezza says no. Echad sdei mikna ve'echad sdei achuzah. No, the same rules would apply to a sdei mikna or sdei achuzah. Either way, Rabbi Yezza says you're paying the same tariff, the same zerachoy mesa'urim b'chamish m'shekel kesef. In that case, he says, what is the actual difference between a sdei achuzah and a sdei mikna? Now, there is a difference, Tosfos points out on the previous Omer. You have a different difference anyway, which the Mishnah is not even addressing over here, this that we just said. A sdei achuzah, if it's not bought back from hekdish by the time Yovel comes, the kohenim get it. It's one of the 24 matonis kohonah, as opposed to a sdei mikna is going to go back to the original owner. But here, the Mishnah and the Gemara are not going to deal with that point, because we're focusing on the owner himself buying it back. Which if he buys it back, then fine, he buys it back, he keeps it. But so according to Rabbi Eliezer, that the same tariff, the same value applies to a sdei mikna or a sdei achuzah. So what's the difference between them? Ma ben sdei achuzah or sdei mikna? Shiv sdei achuzah, who knows in chomish, or sdei mikna ain't a knows in chomish. The only difference is, he says, with sdei achuzah, if you yourself are buying it back from hekdish, you're not just paying that one stela and one punyan per remaining year to Yovel, you're also adding a chomish. Whereas if it's a sdei mikna, ain't a knows in chomish, then you're not paying an extra chomish. But either way, he would say you're still paying the same fixed value.
If you yourself
were makdish a field, Rabbi Eliezer is saying, if it was your own sdei achuzah and now you yourself are buying it back from hekdish, meaning that you inherited from your father, who inherited from his father, etc., back to Yeshua's time, then when you buy it back from hekdish, you're paying one stela and one punyan per year remaining to Yovel plus a chomish. So in our example, let's say 30 years left to Yovel, you're not just paying 30 stela and 30 punyan, you're adding an additional, whatever it is, 7.5 stela, 7.5 stela, and then 7.5 punyan, whatever.
A
chomish
of what?
A chomish of the value.
The
amount that you're paying per year, yeah. So in that case, you'd be paying 37, 38, whatever it is, stela. No, not a punishment.
No.
It's just a standard thing. When you buy many times, when you buy your own thing back from hekdish, also when you're redeeming your Maaser Sheni and various other things, you're always adding a chomish. Maybe it's to support hekdish. Oh, but I'm right at the end. I think it's at the end of Hilchos Tzemura. But the reason is the Torah doesn't want. Let's say that you're going to be makdish something, and then you're going to try to cheap it out and try to get away with paying less. So the Torah says make you pay an extra chomish. That way you're not going to try to undervalue it. You're not going to try to.
Yeah,
but let's say for example, you're going to try to use excuses. After all, I was makdish it, so why should I be able to buy it back at a discount or whatever, and I decided now that it's worth less. So, yeah, whatever. So, like this soft matura b'chona, the matura just says, pay an extra chaymish, and that way, for sure, you're not buying it back for less than what it is. But I'm a maestas, so I tried to find time for the mitzvah. There is, by the way, there's an interesting idea about this. I don't remember now the source that says that we find, I think maybe it's the Shalach Kaddish, I don't remember, that says that actually we find Hashem does the same thing for us. When Hashem pays, we know the famous thing, last Mishnah of Ruchin, that every tzaddik is going to get Shin Yud Olamus. Why up to 310? One explanation is because 248 mitzvah day plus a chomish equals 310. So Hashem also pays us a chomish of 248. So 1/4, which comes out to 1/5 of the total, is 62. A chomish is 1/4 of the original, which is 1/5 of the... Yeah, because 1/5 of the new total, right? So 62 out of 248 is 1/4, and then 248 plus 62 equals 310. So the Gemara starts off. Amar Rav Huna, Hikdish Sada Malaya Ilonis. If a person is Makdish, a field that's full of trees. True Poydon, so now what happens if he wants to redeem that field from Hikdish? First of all, we have to figure out, was he Makdish the trees? And second of all, what do we do with the trees? Does it go with the same tariff that you just go according to Zerah Chomas Odom, Bachamishim Shekel Kosef, or do we count the trees separately? So he says, Poda Ilonis the Shavyon, he has to buy back the trees for their actual market value. We don't apply the Zerah Chomas Odom rule. No, right now, when he wants to buy some Hekdesh, we figure out the market value of these trees. He has to pay Hekdesh that amount. V'chozer, Poda Kaka, based Zerah Chomas Odom, V'chamishim Shekel Kosef. And then the field, he pays the fixed tariff of 50 seller right after Yovel for each base course. But the trees are counted separately. Alma, which goes to show, Kasava Rav Huna, or the Makdish V'ayin Yopa Makdish. Rav Huna apparently holds when a person is Makdish, he's Makdish generally, in generously, so therefore not that we say that the trees are considered bottle to the field, and therefore that he's just going to be having to pay for the field, and the trees effectively will be thrown in for free. Rather, we assume that he meant to be Makdish, the trees separately, and the actual land separately, and therefore when he's buying it back from Hekdesh, he's paying separately for the trees. Well, a chomish, yeah, he's also paying a chomish. That's also true. That's a separate matter, but we're not even dealing with the chomish right now. We're talking about that we're saying that we don't consider the trees to be just agav karka. We consider the trees to be a separate entity of his own. So we assume he was makdish the land, and separately he was makdish the trees.
So we don't see how he acted it.
No, it's not a matter of asking him. It's a matter of we assume buying you off a makdish. No, because if he didn't mean to be makdish the trees, he would have said so. So like this, we assume he was Makdish the field and the trees, the pastures. No. Maybe he's just demonstrating to them how it's supposed to be put on. Okay, I don't know. Okay, anyway, whatever. So the point is, no, we know he was definitely Makdish the trees. The only question is he Makdish the trees in such a way like they're just agav the land? In that case, when he's coded, then he just coded the land and the trees are thrown in for free. As opposed to if we say he's makdish the trees separately, because the ayin yopa makdish, then he has to buy them back separately. And then zerah chomas to odim doesn't apply, then he has to buy them at their actual market value.
We can see how we sold it.
No, because again, he was makdish. We know he was makdish the trees as well.
So let's say he's
makdish
it, he had to pay for it.
No, when he makdish it, you don't pay for anything. You're giving it to Hekdesh. However, Rav Nachman says, Rav Huna, I have a contradiction to you. Our Mishnah has said, whether a person is being makdish in a low quality land in cholat hamachos or high quality land in the orchards or vineyards of Sebasti, noisin based there a chomaser and bachamishim shekel kosef. So he's still paying 50 star. He's paying 50 shekel, 50 selah, whatever for every base core. And pardesis implies that there are trees or vines over there. So apparently he's not paying separately for the vines. Omalei, so Rav Huna answers him, Re'uyala Pardesis Kamina. Okay, I would understand. The mission doesn't mean that there's an actual place where trees or vines or whatever are planted. It means a place that you could plant trees or vines or whatever in. Not that it actually has them at the time. No, we're still talking about Pardesis Sebasti, but we're not talking about an actual Pardis where it actually has vines or trees or whatever growing in it. It means it's land where you could plant vines or trees.
Cannot be
We have two different cases in the Mishnah, Cholot HaMochos versus Pardesis Sebasti. The point is, remember what I was saying, neither one is talking about there's actual trees in it right now. If there are trees in it, you are going to be buying back the trees separately. We're talking about where it's a place where you could plant trees. Pardesis doesn't mean a place where there are actually trees right now. It means a place that could have trees planted in.
But a field also has a place where...
Not all of them. Some fields are suitable to plant trees. Some not. It depends how deep the soil is. It depends on all kinds of factors. If you have land where you have dead rock is only a few inches below the topsoil, you're not planting trees over there. There's not going to be room enough for the roots of the trees to get deeply up enough down into the soil. The only thing you're going to be able to plant there is grain or vegetables or what have you that have shallow roots. Okay, fine. Okay, Rav Nachman says, I have another contradiction. A Braita says, base zera. Now, when the Pasuk says zera, a place where you can plant, which implies, zera usually implies planting things like grain or vegetables or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Aimly ella base zera. If you only had that word, you only know that it's a place where you actually plant seeds. Deg fanim, how about a field that where vines grow? Usdeg panim, or a field where bamboo or reeds or whatever grow. Usdeg lonis, or a field where trees grow. Minayin, how do we know the same ginim apply? You have the same tariff, the same sela and punyan per year. Talmud loyma sodem, mekol makom. Therefore, the pasuk says a field, which means whatever kind of field it is, the same rules still apply. So again, that seems to imply we're talking about even if it's a field that has trees in it, because the Braita had mentioned today on us, Amalei. And again, Rav Huna answers him, Hokinami, Poida v'choze or Poida. You're right, but what the Braita means is over there that the field is valued separately and the trees are valued separately. The trees he's going to buy back for their actual value, and the field itself he's going to buy for Zerah for Chamishim Shekel Kof. He's going to be redeeming the trees or the vines or whatever by themselves for their actual market value, and then he's going to be buying back the field from Hekdesh for the actual value that's fixed in the Torah.
First, he's going to take the trees.
First, he's going to be buying back the trees from Hekdesh, and then he's going to be buying back the field, which is what Rav Huna said that we do, that we don't consider the trees to be bottle to the field. Okay, Eisve, Rav Nachman says, I have another contradiction. A Braita says, Hikdish shloisha ilonis nimata asar al beisa. Suppose a person has 10 trees that are planted in a beisa, and Tosfos says, specifically actually we're talking about young trees, older trees, you wouldn't plant them quite so thickly together. A beisa is only a beisa is an area only, a beisa is 50 by 50 amas. So, it's 2,500 square amas. So you wouldn't plant 10 mature trees. You wouldn't have 10 mature trees growing in there. They'd be way too close together. But we're talking about young trees, where you can plant them 10. 10 is a reasonable number to plant in a beisa. So if out of those 10, you will matish 3 of them, shlosha ilonis, mimata asar la beisa, so you will matish 3 trees out of the, and we learned back in Bava Basra, a general concept that when you sell somebody 3 trees in your field, automatically, he's entitled to a certain amount of karka under the trees and between the trees and around them and whatever. Yeah, easements like that. So over here, he was makdish 3 trees out of the 10 in the beisa. How does a hikdish of a karka? That's a lonis shebeinayim. Then the rule is we say he was makdish the land. Automatically, he's makdish all the land that is between these trees. That's a lonis shebeinayim and any other trees that are in that land between them. So if you have, let's say he was makdish a tree here, here, and here. So let's say any tree. So if he's giving hikdish, therefore, everything that's within that triangle, yeah, is also going to be, yeah. So then, and continues the Braita, when he's poida, how do we do it? Poida based zerach chomer sorim b'chamishim shekel kesef. Then he's paying at the rate that it says in the Mishnah and in the Pasuk, one seller and one punyan per year. Pachas mikan or yoser mikan, or yoser akein, but if they were planted less than 10 trees to a base saw, or more than 10 trees to a base saw, that's not the normal way of planting trees. The normal way to plant young trees is exactly 10 per base saw, and that way each one has exactly the amount of area that it needs for its roots to spread out and then get nutrition and whatever. Then, so if you have fewer or more trees than 10 in the base saw, Oshik Dishin Bazachazer, or if he wasn't makdish all the 3 trees together, but he was makdish first one and later on another one, etc. Then we say he was not makdish the land or any of the trees between these ones. And not only that, even if he was makdish the trees separately, where, again, when you have fewer or more than 10 trees in a base stuff, let's say with Makdash only the trees, if you could do that, the trees only belong to Makdash, and later on he was Makdash the Karka, so now you should argue now maybe, okay, originally the trees weren't bottled to the Karka, but now maybe that he was Makdash the Karka, then maybe the trees should be bottled to it, and we should be poda, when he's poda the Karka, the trees will automatically go in, go with it. No. Now, when he comes to redeem that land, he redeems the trees from Hekdesh for their actual value. And the land, he's paying one seller and one punyan per year. So therefore, says Rav Nachman to Rav Huna, so you see from this braisa that you, in the first case, where to begin with, you will makdish three trees, and automatically Karka goes with it. We see that with the braisa saying when you pour this, you're just paying one seller and one punyan per year. Nothing about the trees being separate. Only in the last case of the braisa are we saying that the trees are considered separate from the karka because you will match the trees separately and the karka separately.
But so then he has to specify that he's only matching the trees without the karka.
Yeah, so no. We said if he's matching three trees automatically, he's matching
karka. No, but that's just my point.
No.
So if he comes and says, I might use the trees, but I don't want the karka around
the trees. I don't know if that would work if he's being makdish three trees, but if he's being makdish one, if he's being makdish one or two, or we also said, no, but one second, never mind one or two, because karka doesn't go with one or two. No, what we said is, it depends whether you have 10 trees planted in a base saw. If you have 10 trees, exactly, no more, no less, planted in a base saw, and you makdish three trees, automatically Karka and Ilonis go with them. What if he were to specify not? Maybe it would work, maybe not. I don't know. But that's not what we're addressing over here. What we're saying is, let's say you only have 9 trees in this stuff, and you were makdish 3 of them, or another possibility is you had 10 trees in the base star, but you weren't makdish all three, you weren't makdish three of them at once. You were makdish one, and then a week later you were makdish another one, etc. Then the land and the trees are considered separate. But in other words, in the first case, the land and the trees go together. And the Braita is saying that, and the Braita is just mentioning the fixed amount. If it was exactly 10 trees, and you were makdish exactly, and you were makdish three or more of them at one time, automatically Hekdesh also owns the triangle or whatever shape of character between those trees.
So if 10 trees, you might use one after the other.
Then Hekdesh doesn't get character, right? So later on, if you makdish character, then you're, yeah, then it's considered a separate transaction. So you, Rav Huna, are going to say, okay, the braisa means, in the first case also, that it means that when you're buying back the land and the trees from Hekdesh, you're paying for the trees and then separately you're paying for the land. Can't. Given that in the sefer we're mentioning that in that case you're being poda the trees and separately you're being poda the karka, because you were makdish the trees and later on you were makdish karka, implying miklal the reisha lo, implying that in the reisha it's not like that. You're being makdish them all together. You're buying them back all together. So you're not paying separately for the trees. So what are you telling me, Rav Huna?
You
can infer the reisha, right? Elo homani dubshinim. No, rather, what we have to answer is that this braisa is specifically according to Rav Shimon. And Rav Huna would say, I don't hold like Rav Shimon, I hold like the Chachamim. Dikan Omar, which Rav Shimon says a concept in Baba Basra, Makdish Ba'ayin Ra Makdish. He says the opposite. We started by assuming Makdish Ba'ayin Yoga Makdish. Rav Shimon assumes that not. Makdish Ba'ayin Ra Makdish. When a person is Makdish, not necessarily does he mean to be so generous.
Because we initially thought it's down the up, or then we included the line.
Then therefore we figured that therefore we want him to pay separately for the trees. But if we say makdish v'ayin ra makdish, means, okay, I makdish the trees and I makdish the land, but I'm not intending for the trees to be considered something separate from the land. When I'm buying it back from Hekdesh, I intend to buy back the land and the trees will be thrown in for food. Because I, l'chachila, when I was makdish the trees, I wasn't makdish them as a separate entity, but rather as something that's just agav the land. Yeah.
Whereas
Ayin Yafa would mean that it's separate, yeah. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braita, that Hamakdish is a Sodeh Hikdish Eskola. If a person is Makdish a field, he's Makdish all of it, whatever there is in that field. Reb Shimon says no. Loi Hikdish El Achorov Hamurkov V'Sadan HaShikma. Reb Shimon says that no, the only things that are in the field that you can say that he was Makdish along with the field are a Chorov Hamurkov, a grafted carob tree. That they would take cultivated carob trees, which produce good fruits, but cultivated means that people actually take care of the trees as opposed to that they grow wild. And well, I guess they have some value to them, but the point is, they would take six trees where the tree itself produces good fruit, but the trunk of it is not very strong. So they would take a branch of it and graft it onto a wild carob tree, and therefore, that way they have, sort of like, you know, you have the whole concept of grafted esrogen, which apostles, there's a similar idea, right? They take a branch from an esrog tree, which the esrog tree is very weak and delicate, and they graft it onto a rootstock of a lemon tree or some such thing. So that way you have the strength of a lemon tree, and you have the fruit of the esrog, and it's possible for sukkah. So
that's
by the same token.
You can drop an esrog tree on another esrog tree.
Yeah, yeah. But that's not going to do you much good, but yeah.
No, you could.
But yeah, you could graft, and you're not allowed to graft between different species of trees anyway. You actually can't graft a lemon and an esrog together anyway. That would be an issue of
Kalayim. Can you graft an esrog from Calabria with an esrog from Israel?
Could be. I don't know. I mean, they're both esrogs. I have no idea. Anyway.
Is it the same species?
Yeah, it's a possibly the same species, but I don't know. Anyway, the point is that over here we're talking about you have different kinds of carob trees. You take a branch of one kind and graft it onto the other. So that, Reb Shimon says, is bottled to the field because it takes a lot of nutrients out of the field. And the same thing, the Sadan HaShikma, the trunk of the sycamore tree. A sycamore is a type of fig, but the fruit itself is edible, similar to figs, but it's not really such good quality. So they grew such trees mostly for their wood. And the point is, this kind of for the wood of the tree. So the point is, what they would do is, this kind of tree produces a lot of branches. What they would do is, they would chop off the branches as much as possible, and that way the tree puts its energy into growing the trunk thicker, rather than the branches, and therefore you end up with a very thick trunk, which can be used for large beings. Yeah. So that sadana shikma is also considered something that Reb Shimon will agree. When you makdish the field, then you makdish it also, because both of these things are old and they're very big, and they take a lot of nutrients out of the field, as opposed to other kinds of trees. Reb Shimon says, "Oh, not that you when you makdish the field, you're not automatically makdish those." So therefore, again, according to Reb Shimon, when you were makdish the field, you weren't necessarily makdish the trees anyway. Makdish buying raw makdish. Therefore, when you're buying it back, sure, you're only buying back the field. You're not buying back the trees, so you weren't necessarily makdish the trees anyway. As opposed to Reb Huna is saying, I'm going according to Hanan. Makdish buying raw makdish. You makdish a field, you automatically makdish the trees in it. Therefore, the trees have a separate din than the field. Okay, the problem with that is, Reb Shimon, if you're going to tell me that this b'raita goes like Reb Shimon, Ema Sefer, look at the next part of the b'raita, V'loy Oid, we said not only that, El Afilu Hikdash Yilam Nosev, even if he was makdish the trees separately, V'achata Hikdash Karka, later on he was makdish the land, true Poydus, and now when he comes to redeem it from Hikdash, Poydus Eilonis B'Shav Yehen, we say there he has to buy back the trees for their market value. And then he's buying back the field separately from Hekesh at one sela and one punyan per year till Yovel. Now, the Eid of Shimon, if you go according to Reb Shimon, now it's true, when you were makdish, you were makdish the trees and the field separately, and the land separately. But by the time you put it, you have both land and both trees. And according to Reb Shimon, lazo boss opinion, we should go according to the situation, how it is when you're being poded from a fish, the lifriku agav arayu. And then you should be able to be poded the trees agav the field, not as a separate transaction. Again, you should be able to be paying zerach chomasodim b'chamishim shekel kosef and get the trees thrown in for free. Ah, you're mocking because not because you had ayin raw to begin with, but because we also know as a separate din that Reb Shimon holds that you don't look at the situation how it was when he was makdish, you look at the situation when he was poyed.
So why should we throw in the ayin?
Because when he's poyed, then you have the trees and the field are both part of makdish. So then we say the trees will be bottled to the field. Where do we see that Reb Shimon says that? The Hashem in and later Reb Shimon to also bought the pidyon. The lifriku ba'agav arayu, so we should be able to poda the trees agav the field. The hasham in and leiv Reb Shimon to also bought the pidyon. We find that Reb Shimon holds you go according to the situation when you're being poda. The tanya we learn in a brayta minayim lekeach sodom aviv v'hikdisha. How do we know if a person bought a field from his father and then he was makdish it ba'achatach mes aviv and then his father died? Now, if he had not been makdish it, he would have inherited it from his father when his father died. So now the question is, does this field have the din of a Sdei Achuza or Sdei Mitna? If it's a stay achuzah, then, as we said briefly before, and as we're going to talk about in more detail later on and on the sector, what happens is, if it's not brought back from Hekdesh by the time Yovel comes, then it goes to the Kohen. As opposed to if it's a stay mikneh, forever. As opposed to if it's a stay mikneh, it goes back to the original owner. So what do we consider this? Is it a stay mikneh because he bought it, or is it a stay achuzah because he would have inherited it from his father?
It doesn't have to be redeemed. It always goes back.
I think there are some of the Mephoshim who understand. I think there's one of the Nosei Kalim on the Rambam, maybe the Mishnah or Melech, I don't remember. He infers from a Rashi on the Chokoseh that maybe not. Even a stay mikneh, if it's still in the hands of the Hekdesh, come Yovel, maybe it would go to the Kohenim also. But whatever, the point is that definitely a stay achuzah will. A stay mikneh, if it's bought back from Hekdesh before Yovel definitely won't, and if it wasn't brought back from Hekdesh, fine, then you have some uncertainty. But the point is, do we consider this a stay mikneh or a stay achuzah?
It means
he donated to Hekdesh.
But doesn't necessarily could be either one, could be achuzah or...
No. So what is this field? That's the question. In other words, this guy bought a field from his father 20 years before Yovel. Then he was makdish it. Then he was makdish it. Then his father died. Now what happens? Comes Yovel. Do we consider it a stay achuzah, and therefore if it wasn't brought back from Hekdesh by that point,
yeah,
then it goes to the Kohenim, or do we consider it a stay mikneh and it returns to the original owner?
The Hekdesh doesn't keep a record of that?
Do we consider this a stay achuzah because he would have inherited it from his father, or do we consider it a stay mikneh because he bought it?
He says that the achuzah goes back to all until the time of nature.
That's fine. This particular field that this son bought from his own father, are we considering this de achuzah because eventually he would have inherited it from his father, or do we consider it a de mikneh because the fact is, right now, he bought it.
That's the machlokes.
He bought it from his own father, yeah. His father was low on cash, so he said, yeah. So, yeah, obviously.
So he bought his father
before Hekdesh. No, he bought it from his father before Hekdesh was involved. His father was short of cash. So his son says, pal, I'll buy this field from you, and I'll pay you X amount for it. Later on, the son goes and is makdish that field. Do we now consider it a stei achuzah or a stei mikneh? So minayin lekeach sodah me'aviv v'hikdisha, person buys a field from his father. He was makdish that same field.
Afterwards,
then his father died. So now, at the time it was donated to Hekdesh, it was a stei mikneh. But after his father dies, does it become a stei achuzah or not? So minayin shetelefonav k'stei achuzah. How do we know, says the Braisa, that we consider it a stei achuzah, and therefore that the rules of our Mishnah apply? Now, okay, according to Rabbi Eliezer in our Mishnah, there's no difference as far as the actual value. Either way, you're paying zerachoy mesorim b'chamishim shekel kosek. But according to the Chachamim of our Mishnah, that a stei achuzah, you're paying the fixed amount, and stei mikneh, you're paying the actual market value. So what are you? So to forget about the question, what happened to Yovel? The question is, when you're buying it back from Hekdesh, what are you paying?
And according to the
According to Rabbi Eliezer, there's no difference in that regard. You're paying the same amount either way. According to him, the only
nachimin
is... No, according to him, you're always paying the erech, the fixed value. According to him, the only nachimin is, A, are you paying the chumash, if it's a stay achuzah, yes, if it's a stay mikneh, not, and D, what's the story with it come yours? Anyway, the point is, so do we consider it a stay achuzah? Talmud Loima, therefore the Pasuk says, Im es stei mikneh se asher loim es stei achuzah. So the Pasuk says, if it's a field that he bought, which is not from the field of his inheritance, and what are those extra words add? It means soda she'en ru'uya li'a sdei achuzah. Means these rules of a sdei mikneh only apply to a field that was never suitable to be a sdei achuzah. You weren't in line to inherit it. Yostazush ru'uya li'a sdei achuzah. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, Rabbi Shimon. So say Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. This kind of field, it was destined to be a stay achuzah, meaning if you hadn't bought it from your father, eventually you would have inherited it anyway. Therefore, that's not included in the rules of the pasuk about a stay mikneh. It's considered a stay achuzah. Therefore, when you're buying it back from Hekdesh, you're paying the fixed value. Is that a chayim
atay? Because in any case, you were
because you were going to inherit it, and the pasuk by saying asher lo mi stay achuzah is implying that this rule only applies to something that would have never been a stay achuzah to you. It would have only been a stay mikneh, which is not the case. Reb Meir says no. Minayin lekeach sodim aviv. How do we know a person bought a field? Well, Reb Meir says actually a different case. Minayim lekeach sodim aviv. How do we know if a person bought a field from his father, umes aviv, then his father died, and then he was makdish it. So this is a different scenario. Before, he was makdish it while his father was alive, and later on his father died. He was the other way around. His father died, but he'd previously bought it from his father. So he's not inheriting it because he had already bought it from him. and then he's makdish it. Nine shehev upon it sdeachuza. How do we know that it is considered a sdeachuza? But how do we know? Talmud Lomar. Therefore, the mayor uses the same pasuk. Imas sdeimik nase asher lo nisdeachuza. Same thing. Sada she'en sdeachuza. That rule only applies to a field which is not sdeachuza. Yotzuzushi sdeachuza. As opposed to this one is a sdeachuza. Because in the end, he inherits it from his father. He bought it from his father, but the point is, it is a sdeachuza. It is something that was meant to be inherited by him because he would have inherited it had he not bought it. So therefore, the mayor says we still have to consider it a sdeachuza. The point is that we're not focusing on that, but we're focusing on the first case where Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon say, yeah, that we go based on the potential. Right. The potential is it had the potential to be a sdeachuza because you, even though you bought it and you were makdish it while the father was alive, but you were later on you inherited it, therefore it's considered a sdeachuza. Doesn't matter. Eventually it would have been a sdeachuza because eventually it would have returned to you and Yoichel. So it's still considered a sdeachuza. It still goes back to Yoichel, sure. That's the way it works, yeah. Anyway, the point is, and what's the point? So now we have two different scenarios. Again, we have Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon dealing with the scenario where he was makdishit and then his father died. And then we have Rabbi Meir adding also the scenario where his father died and then he was makdishit. Where Rabbi Meir says, even in that case, we're considering it sdeach was offered. Now, let's consider Ilu l'Rav Yehuda v'l'Rav Shimon. Now, according to Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon, afilu hikdisha v'achakach mes'av, even if he had been makdishit and then the father died, which is the scenario that they're talking about, it would still be considered, according to them, we're saying it would be considered a de'achuza. Now, my timer. Now, why would that be?
Even after he bought it from
his father. So why would they say that even in that case it's this? My time. Are you going to say it's because of the pasuk? Are you going to say it's because of the pasuk? Why? Doesn't the pasuk come to teach us what Rav Meir is saying? Rav Meir is saying that yotzuzushi sdeachuza, that the fact that the Torah stresses that it's sdei miknosei and not sdeachuza, right, implies that this rule of sdei mikna does not apply to something that would have been does not apply to something that is a sdeachuza. Okay, that's the difference. Sorry, Rav Meir is not going according to potential. Rav Meir is going according to actuality. Right now, when his father died, at that point it becomes a sdeachuza. At that point, it becomes a sdeachuza. Later on, he was makdishit. So the mayor says, we look at how it was right then. In other words, the mayor apparently would disagree with Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. He would say if he was makdishit and later on the father died, we would say it would be considered a sdei mikneh, because at the time he was makdishit, it was a sdei mikneh, even though later on it has the potential to be a sdeachuza, whereas Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon are going according to the potential. So it can't be they're doing that on the basis of the pasuk, because the pasuk more logically fits with Rabbi Meir's opinion. That we go according to how it is now, not its potential.
The time
of makdishit. Asher loy misdeach was also. That it's not from his sdeachuza. In other words, right now it's a sdeachuza. Not really a sdeachuza. Elo lav mishum de ozo bosopidion. Apparently, the idea must be because Rav Shimon and Rav Yehuda go according to how the situation is when he's redeeming it. And when he's redeeming it, his father's already dead and he inherited it, and therefore they're calling it a sdeachuza. So we see that Rav Shimon goes according to the situation when you're poyged. So getting back to what we said before then, by the same logic, if you were makdish the tree without the land, and later on you were makdish the land, Rav Shimon should say, okay, now you have a situation where there's land and trees that belong to Hekdish, and you're buying it back from Hekdish. Therefore, we should be considering the trees to be bottled, to be agav to the land, and therefore you just pay for the land at a fixed rate, and you get the trees thrown in for free.
Because
at the time you're being poydeh, you have land and you have trees. So the same way as he would say, so in other words, according to him, when we quoted before Braisa, where we said there's two scenarios. One where he was makdish trees and with them he's makdish some land. And the other one where he was makdish trees and separately he's makdish land. And the Braisa is saying in the first case he's only paying for the land and the trees are thrown in for free. And in the second case he's paying for the trees separately and the land separately. And you're telling me this is according to Rav Shimon, because according to the Chachamim, Rav Huna would be saying that the Chachamim would say in both cases you'd be paying for the trees separately. Because makdish, ayin yachol makdish. If you're going to say the braisa is according to the pshimin, why in the second case are you paying for the trees separately? If you went according to when you were makdish them, sure, you were makdish the trees separately and the land separately. But if you go according to how it is right now, which is what Reb Shimon holds, you look at the situation when you according to how we understood this braisa, that he goes according to the situation when you're poida. When you're poida, you have land with trees on it. So why are the trees considered a separate thing? The answer is Amar Reb Nachman Yitzchak. No, actually, that's not the reason why Reb Yehuda and Reb Shimon hold that way. It's not because they go according to the pidyon. It is that they're basing themselves on the pasuk. You're arguing the pasuk seems to fit better with Reb Meir's opinion, that we go according to the fact whether right now, at the time of when he's makdashid, is a sdeach ozer or not, not that we should look at what its potential is, but no, rather, Reb Nachman Yitzchak says, Reb Yehuda, Reb Shimon, kro ashkechu v'dorush. Reb Yehuda and Reb Shimon themselves found a pasuk, actually the same pasuk, and they darshan it differently than Reb Meir. So nothing to do with the question of whether you go according to the time of the pidyon. They had a reason to darshan in the pasuk differently, because they argue like this. Im kein, if all the pasuk means to tell you is that you go according to the situation right now, at the time of the Akdasha, is it Sdei Mikna or is it Sdei Achuza? If that were the case, Lichta Rachmana, the pasuk should have said, Im es Sdei Miknafe Asher Loi Achuzasai. It could have said, if it's a field that he bought, which is not his Achuza. My misday achuzasay. What do we mean by adding the word misday? It means sada she'ena ro'ya liyasday achuzah. It means only the rule only applies to a field that is not, that doesn't even have the potential to be misday from the field of his achuzah. Only that kind of field would be considered a sdei mikna. As long as it has the potential to be misday, that's what they say. We're learning from the extra word misday, or maybe even from the extra mem at least, whatever, that even if it only has the potential of being misday achuzase, then that's enough to give it the dinim of sdei achuzase.
Not like Reb Meir,
in other words. So in other words, we thought that the pasuk fits better only according to Reb Meir, and therefore Reb Yehuda and Reb Shimon must be using a different logical reason to say, namely that we go according to the time of pidyon. Now we're saying no, they doubt in the pasuk differently than Reb Meir, because they see an extra word in the pasuk that's available for a drasha.
So Reb Meir would say what?
So Reb Meir would say you go according to how it is right now. Is it right now Sdei Achuzasai, or is it not? If it's not Sdei Achuzasai, then we consider it Sdei Miknasai.
And
Reb Yehuda and Reb Shimon would be saying that no, since you have the extra word misday over there, it means not only if it's right now Sdei Achuzase, but even if it has the potential to be Sdei Achuzase. So nothing to do with them holding that you go according to the time of pidyon. They don't necessarily. Reb Shimon doesn't say you go according to the time of pidyon. Therefore, the braisa works out very well. The braisa that I reported before works out very well. If you were makdish the trees and the land together, Reb Shimon will say makdish v'ayin raw makdish. Therefore, you never intended to be makdish the trees separately. Therefore, the trees are bottle and they go agav the field. When you buy back the field at the fixed value, then Hekdish throws in the trees for free, based on the Xeris HaKotzer, that you're paying one sela and one punyan per year, regardless of the value of the land. As opposed to, if you were makdish the trees separately and the land separately, okay, each one is a separate Hekdish. Therefore, when you're buying them back a separate Hekdish. Okay.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm.
Well, the halacha is like the halacha in that is like Reb Yehuda and Reb Shimon, I think. But as far as this whole issue, do we paskin like Reb Huna? The Rambam paskin like Reb Huna. That you always because you say makdish buying yachal makdish, therefore you're always going to be buying back the trees separately. However, now we're going to have another gemara over here where a papa addresses this, and the Raivad and the Rambam understands that the papa is arguing with Reb Huna. And therefore, halacha kabasroi, we have the usual rule that from the time of Abaye and Rabba and on, and the papa is after Abaye and Rabba, the halacha is usually like the later, is usually like later Amora, in this case, her papa. So that I've learned that the halacha would not be like Rav Huna. Fine. Amar the papa. Hikdish trushin, if a person is makdish, rocky land, which can't be planted. So we talk about in the Mishnah, a person with makdish, let's say sandy land. It's not very good quality for growing things, but you could grow things over there. As opposed to trushing with land that's completely unplantable. Poydan b'shovyan, then you buy them back from Hekdish after market value. You don't say Zerah HaMasarim. My timer, why is that? Base Zerah Amar Achmana. Because after all, the Pasuk mentions the word Zerah. It has to be a place where you can plant. Behind Lav Benezrin, you know, this is not the kind of place where you can plant. Therefore, the rule of Zerah Chaim HaSa'odim does not apply to it.
Therefore, you take him first.
Therefore, you go according to the actual market value.
You look at spot, and then what you would take it?
Then you would go at Zerah Chomus Odin at one shekel, one seller, and one punyan per year, regardless of the quality of the land. Based on the fixed value, because Shoshin, you don't do that. Another din says Lloyd Ga'olan. Now, what happens? Again, we said that if you don't buy back your Sdei Achuza from Hektish before Yovel, then it goes to the Kohenim. And in particular, Rashi mentions the example over here, if the Gizbar sold it to somebody else. Because we're going to learn later on, at the end of the Chos, when we deal with these dinim in more detail, we're going to talk about the various cases. If you bought it back from Hektish versus if Hektish sold it to somebody else, versus if it's still in the hands of Hektish come Yovel, etc. But if the Gizbar sold it to somebody else, definitely the rules apply that Hektish is now considered the original owner, and therefore it goes to the Kohenim. So if you didn't buy it back from Hektish and the Gizbar ended up selling it to somebody else, Yotzin b'Yovel, that kind of property would go back to you in Yovel. It does not go to the Kohen. My timer, again, Soda Amar Rachmana, because if you did not buy it back, it would still come back to you, because Soda Amar Rachmana Koldu, because after all, the Pasuk mentions in that connection, the Pasuk says, V'hoya the field when it goes out in Yovel goes to the Kohenim. Therefore, it doesn't matter what kind of field it is. Yotzin by Yovel. It does go to the Kohenim in Yovel. Sorry, I got that wrong. If you didn't buy it back from, in other words, what we're saying is, like, on the one hand, we don't consider it like a Sdei Achuza. We don't do the fixed value because there it says Zerah. On the other hand, when it comes to the rule of it going to the Kohenim, it does go to the Kohenim. Because when it comes to it going to the Kohenim, the Pasuk doesn't mention Zerah there. It just says Sodeb, therefore, Kol Duhu, whatever kind of field it is, a field's a field, and therefore the rules apply to it. So it will go to the Kohenim. Doesn't matter if it's bad. So therefore, it will go to the Kohenim. Another din, Macha Troshin. Now let's not talk about Hektish. Let's talk about suppose that you sold it to another person. A field of Troshin, Macha Troshin. If a person sold a field of Troshin to somebody else, Nikolin Pochrin. No, Troshin again means hard ground, rocky ground, which can't be planted. So that now, we're going to learn later on in the Masechta, we're going to learn towards the end of the Masechta, that the Torah tells us if you sell a field to somebody else, you are not allowed to buy it back within the first 2 years. That other person has to be able to have possession of it and be able to get tevua from it for 2 years in a row. And only then are you entitled to buy it back. That's what the Torah says. Well, later on, I guess we'll talk about reasons for it. But right now, we just need to know that that's the deal. Even if the guy wants to sell it and you want to buy it, the Torah says the mispreshnate tevua is given to Allah, which means that there has to be 2 years. But over here, you sold troshin, nigolin pochas mishtei shanim. You can buy them back within 2 years. My timer, Misper Shnei Tvuris Amar Rachmana, because the Pasuk mentions he has to be able to have it for a number of Shnei Tvuris, and the word Shnei, by the way, has a double meaning. It means years, but it also means two. That's where we learn, 2 years. So there has to be at least two Tvuris. The Ilad B'nei Tvuris, you know, this kind of place is not suitable for producing Tvuris, therefore the rule doesn't apply to that.
That's not as good, but...
No, it's Russian. We're talking about it's completely rocky. It's completely unsuitable. It's like a solid thing of bedrock, let's say. Loi Ga'olon, and on the other hand, if you did sell it, and you didn't buy it back from this other person before Yovel, Chizeres, L'bailam Yovel, and it goes back to the owner in Yovel. My timer, why is that? The Shavlach was also Amar Rachmana, because the prophet says he should return to his ancestral estate, behind Nami Ahudhi. This is part of his ancestral estate. You can't plant in it, doesn't matter. Another din, says Rapapa, Hiktish Ilonis, if a person has makdish trees, Poda B'Shavyeh, and then he has to buy them back from Hektish at their market value, even though they're his Ahuza, nevertheless, the rule of Zerah Chomus Odom doesn't apply. My time, a base Zerah Amar Rachmana, because the Pasuk mentioned the place where you can plant seeds, below Ilonis, so it doesn't apply to the trees themselves. So here's where the Ravid says, you see from this, Rav Papa is arguing with Rav Huna. Because on Amar Aleph, we mentioned that Rav Huna holds that you buy back the trees separately from Hektish, fine, but that the land itself is Zerah Chomus Odom. So he says that apparently Rav Papa is arguing with Rav Huna on that point.
But in the Mishnah, he was arguing about a big Sarah or not?
Rav Huna in the Gemara had mentioned the case where you makdish trees, where you makdish land with trees on it, where the trees are considered something separate and the land is considered something separate. The land is Zerah Chomus Odom, the trees is at market value. Rav Papa is mentioning over here where you makdish trees, implying only if you makdish trees by themselves, says the Rav, implying that apparently that we would say if you makdish trees and land, then different rules would apply. So therefore, he understands that he's arguing with Ravona. Whereas the Rambam doesn't understand it that way. The Rambam understands Rav Papa is saying basically the same thing as Ravona, and in fact, he paskins like Ravona and like Rav Papa. Okay. So why are the trees at market value? Because again, beis zera means not trees. Loiga olon, but if you didn't buy it back from Hekdish, ein yotzim l'koyinim b'yovel, those trees do not go to the koyinim and yovel. You get them back because v'hoya sadam rachmana, because the pasuk says that the field goes to the koyinim v'lo ilonis, the field meaning not the tree.
In a
beis zera. Mochar Ilonis, another din, says Rav Papa, suppose a person sold the trees by themselves to somebody else. We consider them like a field in that regard. Eden Nigol and Pachas Mishteshanim, you're not allowed to buy them back within 2 years. My time, a Shnei Tvor Samar Achmana, because the Pasuk says two years of produce. Vahani B'nei Tvoris Ninu, trees produce produce. Therefore, the same rule of 2 years applies to them. Loi Ga'olan, Ein Chazeres Habaylim B'yogol. On the other hand, says Rav Papa, if you did not buy them back from the other person, you do not get them back in Yovel, the tree. My time of a shodlach was thus, Amar Achmana. Why? Because the pasuk mentions that a person returns to his ancestral estate, his ancestral property, v'lo ilonis, implying not trees. Because achuza implies v'lo ilonis, not trees. Because in other words, achuza just includes the ground, right? It doesn't include the trees. Right? The pashtus, I guess you could say, you live on the ground, you don't live in the tree. Apparently that's what he's saying. The trees are considered something separate, and if you only sold the trees and no land, then you're not getting them back in your land. Okay, now let's analyze that. Omar, we said that Rav Papa had said, Hikdish Yilonis Poydah B'Shavyan. We said if you makdish trees, you're buying them back from Hekdish for their actual market value. So the question is, Amai, why would that be? The Likdishu Agavar Ayu, the Likdikua Agavar Ayu. Wouldn't we say that when you makdish them together with the land, as we talked about on Omer Aleph, and when you're buying them back ag of the land,
meaning
with the land. So you should be paying the zerach chomus to orim b'chamishim shekel kosa for the land, and the trees get thrown in for free. V'chikema ilonis akdish adalai akdish. You're going to argue maybe he was only makdish the trees. He was not makdish the land under the trees, at least. Didn't the Chachamim of Nahauda say a rule? If a person sells a tree, a single tree to somebody else, automatically the person is also acquiring also from the base of the tree all the way down to the Tahoim, all the way down to the depths of the earth under that tree. So automatically, in other words, you're selling a tree, even fine. You're not selling three trees, so there's no land around the trees or whatever, but the actual footprint of the tree itself, the actual place where the trunk itself stands on the ground, right. You are buying that. So why shouldn't we say the same rule applies over here, therefore, that we should say that the tree is bottled to land underneath it. Therefore, we should say the land goes at Zerach Chomis to Erdem B'chamish and Shekel Kosef. And if, let's say, for example, the trunk of this tree takes up, I don't know, let's say one-tenth of a base core, let's say, then fine, he's paying one-tenth of a seller per year. One-tenth of a seller and one-tenth of a punyan, let's say, per year. Why don't you say that? Why are we saying that you pay market value for the trees?
No, the Nahadoya
saying that nobody argues with them. But the answer is Lavni Itmar Allah. Don't you know there was also said about it in that sugya, the Ba Machmas Taina. That rule applies where the guy is coming and making a taina to the one who sold him the field and telling him that when you sold me the trees, you mentioned that there's also going to be karka involved. So, in other words, only in that case do we say that then there's karka involved. Then we say, fine, the other guy can say, you're claiming maybe, therefore, that you should be entitled to karka around the trees also. Fine, but you're not entitled to that. All I meant was the karka under the actual trunk of the tree. But other than that, you don't say that land is automatically included. You could sell a tree without the land under it at all. And the same thing, you could be makdish a tree without the land underneath it at all. And therefore, that's what Rav Papa is saying, that therefore the trees are just go according to the shop. According to their actual market value, yeah. Unless he specified that he's been makdish the land as well, and then yeah. Tanan Abonim, we learn in a braisa. B'michsas ma bol lilmoid. Let's analyze this pasuk about de mikna and de achuzah. Michtas means the evaluation, means the actual value of the land. The pasuk describes the imas demiknaseh shalom esdeachuzah. So a person is makdish a field that he bought, which is not part of his deachuzah. So the pasuk says the chishav lo yakoyin es michtas ha'ezecha. The koyin has to figure out the actual market value of the property ad shnasa yovel, how much it's worth until yovel, because again yovel is going to be returning to the original owner, and then he pays that. So what are we learning from that word michtas? Ma bol lilmud. What are we learning from that word michtas? So like this, this is now we're going to address the machlokas in our Mishnah where we have the Tanakama said that there's a difference in valuation between Tzdei Achuzah and Tzdei Mikna. That Tzdei Achuzah you're paying a fixed amount and Tzdei Mikna you're paying the actual market value. Now we're going to analyze that machlokas. I skipped actually. We said the Gemara had actually quoted the piece from the Mishnah, Tzdei Mikna Noisin Shavya. We said Tzdei Mikna you're paying the fixed value, that means the actual value, and Rabbi Yehuda said you're paying the fixed value. So let's analyze where that machlokas comes from. Turn it up on. B'michsas ma b'lumud. What are we learning from that word b'michsas? So like this. L'fi shenema zerachoyim esa'orim b'chamishim shekel kosef. The pasuk says in the case of a tzdei achuzah that you're paying 50 stela for every base core, if it's right after yovel, that is. Yochol as tzdei mikne kein. You would think the same thing. One stela and one punyan per year is how it works out, right? You would think the same thing applies to a tzdei mikna. No, tamadloim a michsas. Therefore, the pasuk mentions michsas, which means the actual market value. That's the kind of Tanakhama. Rabbi Yezer says no. Nema kan v'chishav v'nema la'al and v'chishav. In both psukim, by the tzdei mikna and by the tzdei achuzah, it uses the expression v'chishav, that the kohen should calculate. That the kohen should calculate the amount he has to pay, and therefore we have a gzeira shava. Malahal and dover kosov. Just like by the same mikna, there's a fixed amount, but the Torah says, afkan dover kosov. So here also, there's a fixed amount. That's where he gets his opinion in the Mishnah, that also a same mikna, you're paying a fixed amount per year.
From the word, from the bechim.
Right. Okay, so the question is, Ibaru. So we have a question like this. Rabbanon, let's talk about the opinion of the Rabbanon. Is it Islahu Gzeira Shava? Do they agree with Rabbi Eliezer? We do have the Gzeira Shava over here from Bechishav. Therefore, so they have to learn something from it. Umakin Leilachoymesh. So they will say, however, we disagree with you, Rabbi Eliezer, that you're saying it means a fixed value. No, what it means is, in both cases, they miknos, they achuzah, in both cases, if you, are the original owner, are buying it back, you are paying a choymesh, an extra choymesh. Maybe they disagree with the Gzeira Shava. Every one of the Chachamim had a Masoda from their Rebbeim of which Gzeira Shavas there are in the Torah, or how many of them there are, or whatever. So they may disagree that this is even a Gzeira Shava, and they would not even hold to the concept of Chomesh either when it comes to Tzdei Mikna.
And therefore?
That's the question. Do they hold that you pay the Chomesh when it comes to a Tzdei Mikna, and that's what they use the Gzeira Shava for, or do they disagree that there's even a Gzeira Shava? Omar Rava, Mistabra Leslahu Gzeira Shava. Rava says it's logical to say that they don't bechlal hold of the Gzeira Shava. Midegali Rachmana Chomish Gabis De'achuzah v'gabi Makdish Beisoy. Since the Torah specifies when it comes to a person being Makdish his De'achuzah, and when it comes to a person being Makdish his house, and both of them the Torah spells out that he has to be a Chomish, Havalei Shnei Ksuv Maboyim Ke'achot. That is two Ksukim where you have the same din repeated. And we know the rule, b'chol shnei ksuv ma'boim ke'achod ein melamdin. When you have two different dinim, where the Torah tells us the same din, you don't learn from them to anything else. Because otherwise, if it was meant to be a binyan av from one of them, it would have said by only one of them, and we would have derived for everything else. So therefore, the Chachamim will say that it doesn't apply to tzdei mikna. So it only applies
when they're learning from one person.
Right. Now, what about, you do have an... So therefore, you would say it only applies to Tzdei Achuzah and house, which are the only two where it's specified, and not Tzdei Mikna. Ulamanda Omer Melamdin, what about according to the opinion, there is an opinion of Yehuda, I think, who hold that you can learn something from Shnei Ksuv Maboyim Ke'achod, because he says, okay, there's a second pasuk, so what? Sometimes the Torah repeats things unnecessarily. But nevertheless, we could say like this, Midigali Rachmana, Choymish B'meister, B'behemah Tehora, or B'behemah Tmeya. Since the Torah also says this concept of Choymish, when you're redeeming your Maita Shemis, and when you were Makdish B'behemah Tehora to Hefdish, and when you were Makdish B'behemah Tmeya to Hefdish, and all of them the Torah says you're paying an extra Choymish, Havalei Tuba. Then you have a lot of places where the Torah specifies it. Ve'in Melamdin, then definitely even Rabbi Yehuda is not going to say that you can learn from that to other things. So only the things where it's specified that you're paying a chomish, not Tzdei Mikna. Okay. Because even according to Yehuda's opinion, the fact is it's not only two places where the Torah says you're paying a chumash. It's at least half. It's at least five things. Dei Yehuda, Bias, Behema Tehoda, Behema Tmeya, and Meiser. All of those, it mentions that you pay a chumash, implying not any place else. Otherwise, the Torah could have said it by one of them, and we could have learned from it to all the other ones.
And so you
learn. So therefore, only those are you paying a chumash, not Dei Mikna. However, the Gemara says, Tanya Kavase did Rava Volemi Taime. We learn a Braisa that agrees with Rava on the actual halacha, that you're not paying a chumash for a Dei Mikna, but not for the reason that Rava says, because you have Shnei Ksuma Boim Tachod, but rather for a different. The Braisa says, Tanya, b'michsasa erkecha, when the Pasuk says you have to pay the actual value of the erkecha, of the evaluation, the word ha'erkecha means hekisha yakotav la'erchen, means the Torah is making a comparison between this and erchen. Ma erchen ein moisef chomesh, just like when you're paying an erech to the bismithus, you're not adding an extra chomesh. Your own erech is 50 shekel, let's say. You don't say if you're paying your own erech, you're paying whatever it is, 62 and a half, you're paying chomesh. You don't. Aps de mikna ein moisef chomesh, the same way. By de mikna, since it uses the same word ha'erkecha, then you're not paying a chomesh. So the halacha is, in fact, like Rava, that you're not paying a chomesh when you're buying a Sdei Mikna back from Hekdesh, but not because of Shnei Ksuma Boim Tachod, but because we have an actual word over here, Ho'erkecha, that teaches us that it's like Erchen. And you never pay a chomesh by Erchen, therefore you don't pay a chomesh when you're buying back a Sdei Mikna from Hekdesh either. Yeah.